Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone.
Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law with our speaker, GW. My name is Martin Michelson. I'll be your host for this evening's conference call brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you're on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone looking for legal advice has no place or business here on any of these calls. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes, just folks saying what they might do were they similarly situated to you. You might get some entertainment out of it. You might get some suggestions, some ideas, definitely people's opinions. But again, that's all you're going to get. Nobody here is able to give you any legal advice, so you'll never get any legal advice on any of these calls. And we always want to remind you that it's always up to you to do your own due diligence, always. All right, so on to the next subject. Let's go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage, www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. We look up in the upper right-hand corner. We see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that. You'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, especially if this is all new to you. First on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American Jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic idea of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process. Of course, this is mostly known for its national high win rate in traffic cases. That's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that's not why we have it up here. The reason that it's up here is once you've gone through the jurisdictionary course, and then you start the common law default process, you'll begin to see very quickly that it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment to the jurisdictionary course. A lot of the core things that you learned about in jurisdictionary, you start to enact through the common law default process. And then, of course, because of the fact that it is primarily known for traffic scenarios, that's usually what it's used for, folks seem to find it more palatable to try that for their first go-around. Most traffic scenarios, even if we do lose, it's just a little citation or something like that. So folks find it a little bit easier to have their first time be with, something like that or something equivalent. And so both of these items are very, very generously requesting just a small contribution, $250 for the jurisdictionary and then $150 for the common law default. And so we encourage you to pick those up at your earliest convenience. Also, pick yourself up a membership at Your Remedies in the Law. You just click register when you're ready to do so. Again, a very generous asking, just a very small contribution, monthly contribution of $10. You can do that through PayPal or auto pay, your credit card, whatever you like. And we encourage you to check that out as well. All right, next up. Next up is the statewide communications. Now it's called Grassfire Communications. If you're not already a member of that, please tell your friends and your family about it. There's no fee or charge for that. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. People there in your local area is the intended idea. Essentially how it works is you've got a very easy to use install wizard that will take you through a setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next. At some point, it'll ask you to pick from a list of topics what your interests are. If you can come up with it, if you can think of it, it's going to be in that list. It's a very, very healthy list. It's ranging anything from, you know, credit card issues, traffic scenarios, veterans' rights, health rights, change of status. I mean, home foreclosures, on and on and on. Anything that you can think of, it's going to be in there. Then it's going to put it all together. It's going to ask you for, you know, what radius are we looking at? We're looking for just, you know, within a couple miles of you. Are we looking maybe if you're in a very rural area, are you looking to expand out maybe and speak with people that are within the same state, whatever it is your preference is. And when it's all done, it's going to put it together kind of how some folks would probably try to describe as a common law, as a social media, but nothing like a social media. Very custom, very private. But how some people would describe that, it's going to put it all together. It's going to put you in contact with people in that radius that have the same interests that you do. And so the idea here is to put the power of communication and the power of education back in the hands of the common man. You know, let's suppose you jump on there one day and you say, well, this happened to me today. And the first person comes in and says, well, I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. All right, well, I mean, that's probably true. It's probably a truthful statement, but I don't know how much help that's going to be to you in learning in your educational process there. Maybe the next person comes in and says, well, I agree with the first person, and I'll tell you what I would do if I were similarly situated. I'd go to my courthouse, go to my law library, by the way. If you didn't know, every county has a courthouse. Every courthouse has a law library. I'd look up these terms, and then I'd go to YouTube, and I'd watch this video. Well, now you're starting to get somewhere. Now you're starting to learn a little something. Maybe the third person comes in and says, I definitely agree with the first two people and love that video that the second person recommended. But I think also I would go to this website and check out this educational process. Maybe it's yourremediesinthelaw.com. Now we're getting some traction. Now we're really getting somewhere. And again, that's all we're trying to get folks to do is to not be afraid to do some education there and to do some due diligence. And if you are doing your due diligence and eventually get to a point where you're handling your own affairs, your own matters, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. All right, on to the next subject. So you may have noticed every time you go to your remedies in the law, you have that little blue box that pops up. Asks you if you want to continue on to your remedy as requested or if you want to check out Americans Restoring America. At your earliest convenience, we encourage you to check that out and go ahead and go on to, you know, Americans Restoring America. The reason we've done this is we're trying to get folks to explore. You know, your remedy under the law has over a dozen different information providers now collectively called the team, but you know, offering many different types of educational processes and ideas. And then Your Remedy is just one of many different sites that all together comprise the umbrella of Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit there for you to explore. Probably most folks have no idea how much is there. They see one part of Your Remedy and they think that that's all there is. And so we're trying to get folks to branch out and to explore and see what else is offered to them there. And so that's why we've got that there. So we encourage you to check that out as well at your convenience. If you ever have a question of whether we have a information provider that's available to give them give you their educated opinion on your particular scenario, maybe I might have an educational process for you. You can always reach out to me, mm@yourremediesinthelaw.com, and I'll be happy to help any way that I can. Or you can always call the 1-800 number. 1-800-625-4250, and make sure you leave a detailed message there, you know, with your name and best contact number and what it, the topic of discussion that you're wanting to possibly get into. All right. Also wanted to draw everybody's attention real quick to Freedoms Radio. If it's not an option for you today to pick up the membership at Your Remedy, You can always go to Freedoms Radio to listen to any of these calls. You don't ever have to miss a call if you don't wish. There's no cost as well for Freedoms Radio. Of course, when you have your membership at your remedy, you're able to, get the numbers to the calls where you're able to go in and interact and ask all the questions that you like. And, of course, it's very detailed, very in-depth. With Freedoms Radio, you don't have the ability really to speak with an information provider, but there is a little bar there, a little box that you can type in a question or comment and click submit, and we do our absolute best to read every one of those out over the air with fairly good success rate here on that. We usually catch everybody. So, again, you don't have to miss a call again if you don't wish, and you can even have some limited interaction there. And that's www.freedomsradio.com. All right, winding down here. This next portion is called Your Caveat Emptor or Your Buyer Beware. When you come aboard with an information provider, if you decide to do so, you come aboard with an information provider and you're going to start a particular educational process, you're doing just that. You're going directly with an information provider. Now, these info providers pay for advertising at your remedy. So that would be a cost to that information provider, along with any other cost that's associated with that particular educational process or that information provider's time. So that brings us to our primary point here. The common question: what's your remedy's refund policy or exchange policy? There is none. If you have an issue like that and you're looking at a possible exchange or refund or something of that nature, that would be a strict and private matter between you and your information provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances at that point. You're, again, always expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular information provider's time or process, and you need to be sure that that's what you're comfortable with, and that you're comfortable with working with that information provider before you start that process. All right, I guess lastly here, we want to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these calls, on these conference calls, are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that one of these speakers has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn. But you are always expected to compose yourself and to maintain respect and dignity at all times. But besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right. Well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening.
Yeah, thank you so very much, Martin. Thank you. Our ancient English writer, some pronounce it Goethe, others pronounce it Goethe, he said, "There are none so helplessly, hopelessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they are free." In Articles of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, Madison said in the Federalist Paper number 39, quote, and this is January 26, 1788, "its jurisdiction," referring to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, "extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other objects." Just 85 years later, nearly immediately following the Civil War, in U.S. versus Anthony, 24 Fed 829, the year was 1873, quote, "the term resident and citizen of the United States is distinguished," meaning different, "from a citizen of one of the several states, in that the former is a special class of citizen created by Congress." Well, you know that if you've been on this call for any length of time now, since we've been doing the GW calls on status. You know that over 14 years of traffic challenges have been met with 100% success. You know that while one of our students had a drug charge propounded upon them, 63-year-old man who bought over-the-counter in California gummy bears with a certain level of CBD and THC in them, again, over-the-counter, when traveling through Arizona, was stopped for a faulty taillight and was charged as a drug trafficker, also having, paraphernalia. The bag that it was in was deemed paraphernalia. This bag is a shopping bag that the gummy bears were in. That was drug paraphernalia. And on and on and on. He faced 18 years to 28 years for this, quote, crime, end quote. And we saw where the charges were totally dropped before it even came to first appearance. Will you plead guilty or not guilty? Well, there is something that we're going to be announcing tomorrow night where one of our students, or one of John's students now, it was originally PJ's students, back in 2017, was charged with a federal crime. We won't get into the crime itself, but just say it's a federal crime. He was in, at the time, Louisiana, and he was using Wi-Fi on private property that belonged to a business that was had open channel Wi-Fi. And after the paperwork was filed by PJ, and this is actually prior to GW, of course, all right, prior to having any knowledge about correcting your status and things like that or any kind of program. And the city in Louisiana ultimately dropped all charges. The federal charges that were there at that time disappeared. Now, what I mean by disappeared is there they were on the public record, and then they were not there on the public record. There was no follow-up, follow-through, or anything else. It was just much like a null process. But there was no paperwork to prove anything other than he was originally charged federally, and then, poof, it's gone off of PACER and anywhere else where you would be looking for it. And so the bottom line is that this young fellow went 4.5 years walking about his home area. And this week, earlier this week, federal agents knocked on the door and arrested him for charges that were once filed 4.5 years before and was never pursued. So the reason why I'm sharing this with you is because I want you to take interest in sharing with your friends and, of course, yourselves to follow up, particularly on Tuesday, these calls that we will be updating you what is being in process. Now, since we learned of his arrest by way of his mother, he was able to reach out to us yesterday for the first time, to John, and we're just now trying to get a handle on it. But John has spent, I think, three different he only has a 15-minute window from in prison to talk to anybody, and he's spent three 15-minute segments with John, where John is coaching him, teaching him what John would say, where he's similarly situated when he has his first appearance this Wednesday, the 10th, in federal court, where he has to answer the questions, are you guilty, not guilty, or nulla quaestio? And this is where the initial challenge of jurisdiction under his status now, which has been corrected, it was corrected I think, a year ago now, or, you know, 8 months ago, 10 months ago, anyways. So his status is corrected. And if you remember, for those of you who have gone through this process, the language is that this status is ab initio from the point of the beginning. In other words, at his very birth, it was recorded that he was a Louisianan. He was a Union State citizen. And that the State Department were to correct their records nunc pro tunc, meaning to the point of the beginning, that they were to correct their records. So this is going to be a most interesting case. Is John was the one that dealt with the narcotics, the drug thing, and it's going to be John and the team that will be dealing with this issue here. So I just want to encourage every one of you to be on tomorrow night's call as this is laid out and John begins to explain what's going on. Don't have a clue how this is going to work out, but it should work out to the favor that benefits this student. Let's see what else. I'm waiting right now for GW to say hello to us. In fact, I might just send him a text real quick to encourage him to say hello, and we'll go from there. I'll continue in just one moment. Let me get this out there. Question mark. All right. So, oh, here he is. There we go. Hello, GW.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey there. Just to explain, and I had not had the opportunity to share this with you yet. I just finished sharing it with the group. One of PJ's students back in 2017, 5 years ago, actually it was four years, 8 months ago, was charged with a state crime and a federal crime. The crime is unimportant what it is, but the point is that after the paperwork, and this is before GW, before we were doing status stuff, this was just fighting things based upon, you know, what the law is as it applies to United States citizens. And the long and the short of it was 7-8 months later, after PJ had started this, the city dropped all the charges against him. The unique thing was is that the federal charges that had been filed, they were sitting there on PACER, disappeared. Hmm. In other words, they were there and then they were not there. There was no paper trail. There was a paper trail that started it, and then poof, it's gone. No paper trail ending it.
Hmm.
This week, I think it was, this is Monday, so it would be Wednesday or Thursday of last week, 3rd or 4th of May. The feds knocked on the fellow's door and took him into custody. So he's presently now in a federal holding cell. Yesterday was the first time we had the opportunity to actually talk to him. And, of course, he conferenced with John. Each call lasts about 15 minutes, and then they cut you off, and you have to start over again. I tell you, I'd sure like to have the monopoly of controlling or making the Gitas on your phone calls to inmates. That thing's a racket. Anyways,
it is.
Yeah, he has his first appearance this Wednesday. And, of course, now he has corrected his status maybe a year ago now. He's corrected his status at least 8 months ago. So John has been coaching him on what John would say where he's similarly situated, so that this Wednesday, the foundation for challenging status, political citizenship status, is going to be on the table. You know, federal crimes are only for federal citizens and only on federal land. So, you know, the feds are going to have fun having to prove that up. And one of the things that I had quoted, let me find it here real quick, was Madison said that, and this is 1788, January 26th, regarding the federal government. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, quote, its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other objects. And then, of course, you've got, 85 years later, 1873, U.S. versus Anthony, 24 Fed 829, quote, the term resident and citizen of the United States is distinguished, meaning it's different, from a citizen of one of the several states, in that the former is a special class of citizen created by the Congress. So this is the entire fulcrum upon which leverage will be mounted for the benefit of this student. We're going to be having a Tuesday walk-a-thon, if you would, every Tuesday, giving people on the call an update of how this progresses. And I was just sharing that with everyone on the call. So, how'd your week go?
Hey, my week went very well. My week's, just more good stuff happening all the time. Just, I've got a guy that just texts me from, the Western Passport Center. Got his stuff through and he flew in to do it. And he's a plant that I have inside of, one of these organizations that's trying to do a lot of work with, educating people. And I decided to join it. It was that Tactical Civics, organization. And I decided to, help one of their top people to go through the process. And, this guy stepped up to the plate and was doing it all and said, man, it's nice sitting here. I'm having a margarita as a free man.
Yeah.
Just had one of my other students, over in Puerto Rico that, is normally in all different parts of the world, but, just got his fast passport done through Puerto Rico. They're very, very, he was very, very timid, to actually pull the trigger on everything. And, lots of coaching, but he got through it and feeling like, he's on top of the world. Just, good stuff. This is, what we've been telling people. This is a good foundational move, just to get things corrected on the record and make sure you're categorized as a sovereign and a national and not one of their piece of property with U.S. citizen. So that's what we're all about. That's what we're trying to do here on this call. And so anyway, it was just a, good week. So anyway, I don't have a whole lot more to go into. No crazy events happening or any crazy dramas on my side. I know, Michael and John are always fielding, situations where they're pretty extreme. And, that's a whole different ball game when you're dealing with that kind of stuff all day, but they're prevailing, somebody was asking me one time, one of my students was, wanted to read, things like, I just want to read some cases about some nationals, American nationals, down the court, their court cases and everything. I said, well, so that's a really tough cookie. Okay. Because here's the thing. Said about our court system, and you just explained it beautifully with what they do with the record, okay, Michael, in that situation with the one gentleman that was charged with a federal crime and then it just disappeared. They can make stuff disappear so fast. And when, for instance, like the IRS, when they win, they publish it. But when they lose, they ask the court to suppress it, to basically seal it, and they do. And so you're not going to read a whole heck of a lot about these cases unless you get it from somebody who has, you know, has their paperwork and their charging orders and their release, you know, paperwork and everything from them directly. And a lot of people don't like to put that stuff out, you know. So, you know, getting it off of Pacer is going to be a real challenge. You know, they'll let a few every once in a while kind of slip through just to show, oh, yeah, yeah, people are, you know, people are winning. But actually, there's a whole lot more winning than you actually realize because they feel it. And so that's kind of the problem with trying to read and get familiar with, you know, how these cases go. But the good news is we have the Supreme Court cases and appellate court cases that, you know, give us the diagram and give us, you know, what we can use. So that's all always good stuff too. So with that said, you know, I'm all for opening up the lines if there's anybody, you know, like to pipe in and ask some questions. If we have any new people for the first time, it's always great to hear from them.
All right. Well, star two, are you here? Star two to raise your hand. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, go ahead and type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit. Just taking a quick moment here to see if we have any new callers, first-time callers. That doesn't look like we do. It's like all right. So let's start over here on the Freedoms Radio side. And Paul in Carpenter's.
Paul's question is going to be answered Tuesday with John. I've already copied it and sent it over to John for him to have an answer for it or prepare it. You can ask the question, though, but the answer will come tomorrow. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. And so, well, it was once the American national status is retained, what are two or three additional suggested remedies that one should pursue if they are now 5 years divorced with twin teenagers and a U.S. citizen, in quotations, ex-spouse?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a John question, and I've already forwarded it to him to be prepared to answer that tomorrow night.
All right. Well, then let's go ahead and just address the formal group here on the call. Star 2 on your keypad if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand. Hopefully I'm not having any further issues here. I'm not seeing anybody pop. Oh, yep, here we go. Okay, I was just taking a moment here to populate. Kent in West Virginia, go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Would it be premature at this time? I might have missed a couple things that Michael was saying in the beginning about this case, although he had mentioned it on one of the calls a couple of days ago. Would it be premature of me at this point in time to ask what we might speculate was the reason that after someone or subsequent to someone correcting their status, that they would come out and arrest them when it's been done ab initio?
Well, okay. I could probably, you know, so when the charges first appeared, his status was not corrected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, for this one gentleman that I believe Michael was talking about. So, you know, and I've reiterated this and talked about this a little bit before, that you're much better situated if you correct your status before and it gets into the databases well before they have some kind of a situation where they want to either charge you, you know, interview you, whatever. And so afterwards, after it's already through the system, like this guy's was, it's a little bit harder of a battle, you know, after, and it doesn't mean you're not going to prevail, but it's going to be a little harder of a battle. So, you know, this was just something they decided to dig up and and decided they were going to go forward with for some reason, you know, and not everybody in the system down at the lower levels that goes in and not necessarily prosecutes, but goes and arrests, okay, a victim like that is going to be in the know about status and these kind of things either. So, you know, that's part of the problem. You know, especially with what happened to me in my situation personally myself, when I was charged up with a bunch of different crimes and I was going through that and after I got out of jail and I corrected my status, everything that had been in progress was a lot harder to battle with and a lot harder to deal with. The new things that they would want to come after me, such as that situation with the IRS, the situation with the CID, Criminal Investigation Division, and then also finally the Justice Department. That was all separate after, okay, new things that were not from before when my status was not officially corrected in the record. And so that was a lot easier to overcome right from the get-go. And that's why it's been my mission, in a way, to try to get people to look at things and get in a great position, especially if you're going to go out there and you're going to be battling and you're going to be doing things in the community and, you know, fighting different things, and to have at least have your status corrected and, you know, be in a better place so that you know, when things happen, you can prevail a lot easier. You know, much
so
less aggressive.
Right.
Right.
So the non pro tunc and the ab initio really are simply words on the paper, which obviously you want to have there to ultimately prove the point. But at the point of time when a case is already going, you're basically saying that, well, you put those words on the paper, but they already got the thing in the system, so they may just keep on rolling forward.
Correct.
Inertia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And they prevail enough, you know, with charging people with all kinds of different things, and they're, you know, they like I said, they might not even be aware that his status is corrected in the system. These people that were, you know, just going forward, it's probably that's probably the situation.
Does this give you any pause to think about whether or not specific people, when you correct your status, if there are some cases that, you know, you might say, well, leave sleeping dogs lie, you know, why stir up something that may not come up again? But do you think when you think this through or have a chance to think this through that it may be beneficial if there were things that were pending before could possibly come up to notify some additional people beyond the State Department so that there is no excuse that they were told, you know, and they can't say, oh, we didn't look at the State Department records?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely, you know. I mean, if you got certain situations, everything's on a, you know, individual basis when that, you know, those kind of things come up. So, you know, people that have pending things they know of should be proactive in garnering the information and you know, sending out their status to, you know, different departments and different courts and things like that for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess as time goes on, this will be further analyzed as to why this happened. So,
yeah.
Okay, thank you, Greg.
No problem. Thanks for the question.
All right.
Again,
next up, we've got Frank in Texas. Go ahead, Frank. You've been unmuted.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Michael and GW, I've obviously researched multiple service providers in this arena and chose to work with you guys, and as I've shared with you over the past month or so, I've gone through the process, got the corrected status, got my passport card, and I'm delighted to have been working with y'all, and I am sending other referrals your way, as I've sent many referrals to Michael and Bernie for the CorpSoul and CRTs, and will continue to do so. However, many of these calls, like me, probably have listened to David Lester Strait and Anna Von Reitz and others that are in this space. And in light of the situation with David and Bonnie Strait over the last week or so, it's interesting to me that David's charges were dropped and removed, disappeared, and 22 of 25 of Bonnie's charges disappeared, but she's still got this five-year deal looming over her. What, and in spite of the differences, GW, of your paperwork and his paperwork, and I understand those. That's why I chose to go with you. But in spite of those differences, it would seem that there is still a sanctity of preservation of their rights, whether they call themselves American nationals or American state nationals, and that what has gone on in Cleburne, Texas, is an absolute kangaroo court. What do you see is happening in this ultimately?
Well, okay, so, yeah, you're talking about, David Strait's personal situation with what he's got going on in his life. I don't wish anybody, of course, any time, harm for anything.
Absolutely.
It's interesting because I was invited to go to a meet and greet, which I'm probably going to go to, that's a local thing here by one of my students who was talking to some other people that he's been interfacing with quite for some time. And it's kind of interesting because it ended up being Anna Von Reitz's group, their state assembly. And when he sent me the information, it was like, oh, crud. Okay, this is honest, people. But I'm going to go and, probably pull a few people out of there, in order to meet and greet.
Probably.
And so what was interesting is perusing the website was kind of interesting because I know the gentleman that put it together, that website is actually a guy that I met through a friend that's been for about a decade that's a miner in the state of Arizona, and this is his kind of his partner that he does a lot of the mining claims with, and this guy put together the state assembly site for Anna Von Reitz, and he's now using our technology, okay, in doing his process, even though he's still the administrator for that site, and he gives me and feeds me information on all the crazy stuff that people that are her students and whatnot that have signed up and joined their deal and got their little plastic card that says you're not detained, it's made by the state assembly, ostensibly. And there's a lot of things that particular woman has done that are just really strange in the past. One of the things is if you go into county records in Arizona and you look up the UCC-1 filings in the state of Arizona, she's got just about everybody listed as her being the fiduciary, okay, over those liens. Everybody that signed up for a card, she files a UCC-1. Okay, this is crazy stuff. Where she gets this, I don't quite understand the nexus and what she's, you know, I know what they're trying to do, but one of the kind of more, I would say, interesting things that kind of tickled me is that I watched her maybe a year ago on a broadcast. It was on the SGT report, Sean, who does a lot of good reporting, and you can find his broadcast on Rumble. Okay, the SGT report. And she was on for 2 hours on two different separate broadcasts. They did them right in a row with a number of other people that were all talking heads, talking about her strategies. They had her on. And one of the things that she made a very glaring mistake, you know, one of, I'm not saying just one, but she made one glaring mistake, which was she had categorized and said that non-resident aliens were the only ones that were really liable for the income tax. Okay. Which of course is completely backwards. You know, it's actually,
right.
you, huh?
Correct.
What's that? Yeah. So, you know, especially if you go into, you know, the IRS code in Title 26 at 1.1-1, you know, the general statement says, you know, there is an income tax imposed on every United States citizen, and then comma, and to the extent of two different code sections, and it says a non-resident alien individual. Okay. Only in two code sections, though. Okay, so the general rule is that the income tax imposed on all United States citizens, and then to the extent of these two little subsections, which, you know, don't most everybody on this call has never been involved with, which is one of which is renouncing your citizenship and paying a big hefty tax, okay, on everything
right.
you sell. Okay, that's one. And another one is actually producing and making and being the signer on on Wall Street, it's a corporate, I'm missing the words here, not a bond, but stock, okay? You know, when you add your name to and you're doing, you know, a corporate stock, okay, like the guys, you know, somebody that owns Twitter or Microsoft, whatever, okay? So most people that I know have never done that. It's mostly people on Wall Street and in that arena that do those kind of things. So she makes that statement, and then I fed the paperwork to Bo and his partner, and they, you know, went over it and the WABEN and everything. And now, okay, on the website, you see that she's now has, or else he's done it. They have the non-resident alien, okay, in the correct place. He's not owing tax. Okay, so that's kind of a little delightful touch. I see, you know, it's made a little bit of a difference. But it's the disinformation. And here I'll make a statement also. I was going through some information this week from one of my clients out of Maui, who sent me some information that she was going to attend this conference, and she wanted me to look over that information, and she respects my opinion, and, you know, all that. And so I decided I would, you know, listen to the information. Well, there's a lot of good, really good information on this broadcast, for instance, okay? But the one glaring thing, okay, that was present on that really got my ire up is the cavalier way that this presenter, which is a woman, presented the information about not having not having tags or license plate on your car, not having a driver's license, and just leaving it there, okay, without an explanation or a caution about how to deal and interface with the police and with the officers involved in a traffic stop. Okay. Now, we covered this on a call, which was the call about that John, Brother John did, and I was a guest on that call, about 3/4 of the way in, and we talked about, he brought up the situation where he intervened with one of his students that was stopped in California, and the young gal had this real belligerent character in her car that she probably shouldn't have had, and it really escalated the situation. And how John talked, John's just amazing when it comes to, his the depth of understanding and the depth of his Rolodex and the people that he knows. He was able to talk to the cops and get a personal, attachment to them through the sheriffs that he knew, and was able to even, talk to him about, my first name, and, really quelled the situation. But then John went over a lot of information, and they talked about non-assumpsit. If those of you on the call that remember that call, talking about how he would sign something and going into that situation, but especially about how to de-escalate a situation. And this is the kind of thing that, we're very proactive. Michael's very proactive. John's very proactive. I'm very proactive with my students to caution them. Yes, you can. I get to ask this all the time. Yes, of course, you can take the license plates off your car, and you can have tags and these kind of things. Here's the thing. Should you? Okay. Are you well disposed and understanding and have comprehension of the law in such a way that you know how to stand in that place and deliver? And I wouldn't, I don't like to presuppose that on anybody. So, there's a lot of things you could do, but should you, because if you do that, if you decide to do that, you're going to be in a place to have lots and lots of interviews. I had I've told the story before, but I've had a pretty good friend that during the Waco standoff, in 1993, I forget. Anyway, during the Waco siege for 51 days, a guy named Gary Hunt, who had intervened in a lot of different situations with the feds and with, like, for instance, Indian nations, he was well known for that. We had become friends, known to each other, and when that happened, he was there right in the very beginning, and he had David Koresh's power of attorney, affidavit of power of attorney to be able to negotiate for him and whatnot. And, of course, that never really even happened. That never really, that never really gelled. But he had David Koresh's power of attorney. He was there near the compound where they were doing the broadcasts that were local there in Waco, and he'd be bringing me the live broadcast tapes so that I could edit them up and that he could distribute them to, necessary places that he wanted to distribute them to. And so he'd be running back and forth from Waco to Arizona here and delivering me the tapes because nobody else would take them at the time and everybody else was scared. And I was like, screw that. I don't believe anybody knows and I don't feel my life's in danger. So I'm just going to do it. So anyway, we did that. But he's a guy that never had a license plate on his. He had a brand new truck. He was an engineer, a surveyor, and he made good money. And he was completely outside the system. He had the MSO for his truck, and he had no plates. He didn't have a driver's license, and that guy was
totally disposed to you know, any kind of interview from FBI to sheriffs, whatever. He always prevailed, okay? And so one day we got together. This was a long time after Waco. And we saw each other, had a cigar together and a drink, and I was walking out, and there's another brand-new truck, and it had license plates and tags and everything. And I was like, Gary, and never seen you have a license plate on your truck before. He says, yeah. I goes, okay. He says, you know, I got married, had my twin girls, and, you know, he says, I just got tired of the interviews, you know? Because been there, done that, got tired of the interviews, I just want to be left alone, you know? I said, hey, totally understand, man. I'm just surprised to see, you know, license plates on your truck. So the thing is, you know, you can do it if you want to, but the thing is, you're going to have a little bit more drama in your life if you do, and just be prepared for the drama. So that's my answer to that, okay?
Well, that was quite a walk. I appreciate that. Let me ask you one other question. You mentioned earlier that once the papers were at State Department for corrected status, they were there. I've already got my passport and passport card back. Is there any way of getting that confirmed other than a friendly LEO running the cards?
You know, this is a very, very common question, okay? That common question happens quite often. Okay, you know, everybody wants to know how to do it. Now, the answer is no. Okay, unless you got somebody inside the system, okay, that can look up the back channel information without getting caught and without any kind of reprisal, which I would suggest, okay. And, you've got to go on testimony and experience from other people, and that's why I'm so, you know, sitting in the situation I'm in, okay, and of course John, you know, in the situation he's in, and I imagine Michael's at this point too, you know, the feedback we get from people that we've led through this process when they get stopped is for most of the time it's pretty amazing, okay, you know, not just stops, going through airports. I got people that fly internationally all the time, and the stories are pretty amazing compared to what they used to go through, okay? And they know something major has changed. And so the sad thing is no, okay, but it's not really that sad because we've just got so much, testimonies that it's working. And so, you know, I hope that suffices because there's really no other way unless you can get a friendly cop to, you know, acquiesce to it and you guys can build some kind of a story together. So in case, you know, the cop gets found out, you know, I mean, they're risking their job when they do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I agree, and I appreciate your feedback, and I'm working on that LEO agenda, and hopefully I'll be able to provide that for y'all. But thank you very much for your feedback. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you. Next up, we've got Jennifer in New York. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Thank you, Martin. Hello, GW.
Hello.
With the, I went to Australia when I had the Global Traveler card, and for it to work, when I bought the ticket, I had to put in the number, so it came up on the ticket, you know, TSA, whatever,
Global Entry Card?
Global Entry Card, yes. Now, yeah. You have to do that to make the passport card work. Do you have to do that with your tickets? Every time you buy a ticket, you put in that card number, you know?
Well, you don't have. I mean, if you don't have global entry, it's not a big deal. One of my guys was asked. In fact, I asked that question to John, and I thought I pretty much knew the answer, but I just wanted to get. He was asking me, "Hey, can you get your brother John to answer this question?" And so I was on that night when he did the Assumpset call that you might want to listen to, but I asked that of John directly, you know, because he had corrected his status, you know, amazing experience, and he also had this global entry card, and he went to update it, and it allows you to put in another passport number. It allows you to update. Do you have a global entry card? And you've got the ability to update the information with a brand new passport.
Oh.
Okay. If you're so disposed to use the global entry, you know, and it doesn't change anything, you know, John said it was totally safe. Doesn't change anything, you know, if you want to use it.
I'm just wondering if the passport card can be used instead of the global entry.
Oh, sure.
Whether it would.
Yeah.
Whether that
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, You can use it or not use it, you know, with your new corrected passport. You can use your global entry card with it or without it, and doesn't really change anything.
I mean, how do they know? How do you know which line to go in? I guess when you get there, that, you know, you're not one of the regulars.
Well, do you have a global entry card?
Well, I do. But
then you can use it.
Yeah, I guess you just got to put it on the card and then look for the TSA thing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and when you're going through customs, whoever you're going through, they're going to ask for your passport anyway. I mean, your global entry card is one thing, but they're going to ask for your passport.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there was something else I was going to reply to that the last person was talking about, but now I've forgotten what it was. So, I was kind of fortunate when I was pulled over that I didn't have my card yet. And so I have a dismissal of my speeding ticket in writing.
Well, good.
So that is my proof. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Super.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 to raise your hand. All right. If we don't have any additional questions, we will start to wrap it up here. Kent in West Virginia, go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Yeah. Greg, in relation to the question that Frank in Texas asked about some other kind of confirmation, do you have any experience with the Homeland Security form I-94? Where, in fact, they will send something back to you if you fill out the form properly, or at least this is what I'm being told, where they find no evidence that you are a U.S. citizen?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you can do that. You can do that if you know how to fill that out correctly. In fact, that was the broadcast that I was just listening to with the woman that was talking about that form in particular and how to fill it out and how to go through that process. Yep.
And do
yep,
you think
you can do it?
Do you think
because there's a you, because when you can check when you go you're going through that form, one of the things that she has you do is
and I don't think it's a mistake to do this, by the way. There's no place where you can check that you're an American national, okay? There's no place that says national. There is a box that you can check that is a non-citizen national, okay? That's the one that she says to check, all right? And then there is also a FOIA request on that form that takes you to another screen where you get to put in all the information to do a FOIA request. And so, yes, you can do that, and you can use that form, you know, as proof, because that's an official government form, you know, official certification.
But so,
a U.S. citizen.
So, do you think that would be an answer to Frank's question about how he can get confirmation other than with a friendly Leo, or, you know, not to get that cop in trouble? Or do you think that this form is something that would just be mailed back if you fill it out properly, and it really doesn't add a lot of weight or evidence as confirmation of what you've done with the filings of the forms with the State Department?
Well, according to this one woman that I was listening to that seems to be, you know, pretty well versed in this process, she believes it is great confirmation that could be used in a number of areas. It could be used in court because it is an official government document, certification document. It's a FOIA. And so you can use a FOIA as evidence in an administrative matter or a court situation.
Now,
so, yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So is she doing this in addition to filing papers to correct her status with the State Department, or is she just doing this as a process where she's having the government, so to speak, quote unquote, admit that she's not a U.S. citizen?
Both.
No,
both.
In other words, a standalone operation.
No, it's not standalone. No, both. Both.
Mm-hmm. May I comment?
Yep. Go ahead.
Anytime anyone in government makes inquiry as to United States this or United States that, this being land, that being person, people, your reply is a question. Sir, ma'am, there are three definitions of United States. The name of a sovereign occupying the position of analogous to other sovereigns in the world. Someone who is subject to the United States, period. Or someone who is a Union State citizen with constitutional rights under the Constitution. Which definition of United States are you asserting when you ask me, am I a United States citizen? End of story. That's it. Game over.
That's a good one, too.
Okay. Does that take care of that for Kent?
Yeah, I guess we'll take that answer. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, Ron in Florida, go ahead.
For those that are looking for confirmation, I don't recommend what I'm about to say, but run a stop sign. Drive a little over the speed limit and have an officer pull you over. He will verify whether you are or are not an American national, in my opinion. Comment?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as long as you have him run your card, yeah, that'll be the
that will that should show you pretty fast.
Just an observation, though I don't recommend drawing attention.
Yeah. Totally understand.
All right. Does that take care of you, Ron?
Thank you, Yield.
All right. And again, of course, it is always never the position here, these calls, to recommend that any such behavior. All right, Frank in Texas, go ahead again.
GW on the, not the previous, but the previous caller from West Virginia. You spoke highly of the, what do you call it, platform that the other person spoke of on validation and another form of government verification. So do you think highly of it enough to go through that process yourself?
You mean doing the forms that we're talking about, that I forget the name of it, but it's a Homeland Security form.
Correct.
Do I think highly of it to do it myself? No, for me, no, because everything I've been through, you know, already has verified to me of my status and standing, and
okay.
And so it's just like, I mean, you can go and do it, you can go and do all these things, and I like to, you know, when I have somebody, one of my clients, you know, reaches out and says, hey, can you, you know, who I really respect, and. And this particular woman's a business owner, and she's you know, I'm giving her the time basically to, you know, to go through it. She wanted my opinion, so I think it's there's some nuggets there, but you know, especially for somebody that's constantly thinking about it, I don't anymore at all for myself because of all the different things that I've been through. You know, have verified to be, you know, you go from that position in life of believing something. You're told something and you believe it. You know, we have this belief. And then when you get the absolute verification of it, now you know. You're in that place of knowing. It's a totally different place, you know. And
right.
So now I know, and it's like, you know. For me, no, but I'm sure for other people, they're wanting more clarification and everything else, and they might want to do something like that.
All right, very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. An anonymous entity writes in on the Freedoms Radio side, at what point do you need to complete W-8? Ben, waiting on my passport card now.
At what point do you what?
At what point do we need to complete? At what point do we need to complete W-8? Yes.
Yeah. So, I'm sure whoever that is, okay, that's going through the process, all they have to do is, if they're, you know, they're a member or they've done it through Michael, all they have to do is reach out to Michael with an email or whatever, and he'll send the W-8-B-E-N fillable PDF with the, you know, with instructions and everything else, so that he can get it completed.
Yeah, just as an FYI, I do that live over the phone with the student at that time, and then send it to him finished and filled out.
There you go. Yeah.
All right. Well, looks like about it for the questions.
All righty. Before we do closing remarks with GW, I'd like to just share real quickly and remind everyone real quickly to be on the call tomorrow night. We will start the saga of the gentleman that we talked about at the opening of this call that was arrested middle of last week, and see how John navigates this on behalf of his student to teach them what to do. And then, of course, Wednesday is Mr. Slevin. It's a very important call with Mr. Slevin because he can show you how you can operate your commercial business either anonymously or you can do it through your name, either way, as manager. And it's a completely tax-voided or tax-free, if you would, application of an LLC. It's the only one of its kind. So with that having been said, GW, any closing comments?
You know, been a good call, been a little short, but that's all right. I mean, well, we had some good questions. So everybody, just have a good evening and bring your friends to the call.
That's right. We should be doubling and tripling the call. I don't know how it is that the people that have done it so wrong for all these years and their students, frankly, have some of them been killed in the process of applying, making application of their corrected status, how they have such high numbers. But the point is that the operation that we offer here is total, complete, it's holistic, and it takes you from point A to point Z and gives you coverage the entire way. You have available to you a team to step in should there become a controversy, and you're educated all along the way on your conduct, which is, you know, what is that saying? With great responsibility comes, I forget, something like that. Anyways, but you get the point. You have great responsibility put upon your shoulders when you assume the mantle of an American national, and you know,
rights and responsibilities.
Sir,
yeah. If I can just on your statement about you don't know how they can have such great amount of people. I look at it this way, Michael, and I'll sum it up in just one statement, and this is a Mark Twain statement, and you remember it well. It's much easier to deceive a man than to convince him that he's been deceived.
Yeah.
And we do the latter part all day long. They do the first part.
Yeah.
And doing much is given, much is expected. I think is what you're looking for. Yeah. All right. So we'll here again tomorrow. And so until then, have a wonderful evening and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.